Hello and welcome to this episode, Motivation from Within. Motivation is something very important and necessary for our students, for their progress and success. As we know, motivation is the drive or the desire to do something or the reasons for acting in a specific way. And to achieve success in any skill, piano playing included, requires that the motivation, the drive to work at it, has to be sustained over a period of time. For our piano students, it's a desire to practice regularly and to work at it on their own in those days between lessons. Skills are learned through repetition, and this requires motivation to return to the piano each day. Now, we all know that motivating students can sometimes be challenging because it's a complex issue influenced by many factors. The teacher, of course, is the most important motivator. But it's also important to realize that the teacher sees the student for a very small amount of time each week, a week that for many students and their families is packed with many other activities and obligations. So as piano teachers, we have a much smaller window to influence our students compared to, say, elementary school teachers who see their students every day. So for us, that small window of lesson time is critical as we set our students up for a successful week ahead and motivate them to do the work. Now, as teachers, I believe we share a common goal to create an inspirational studio environment. We want to inspire our students and lay a foundation for lifelong learning and appreciation of music, regardless of the age or level of the student. I think Frances Clark summed this up beautifully when she stated, and I quote, "My goal as a teacher is to create a climate in which my students experience continual musical, intellectual, and personal growth, and to become increasingly dispensable to them in the process." These are very wise words. So in that weekly 30 minutes, how do we work with each student and hopefully send the student away excited and happy about the lesson and motivated to do the work needed in the week ahead? Well, there are other motivators besides the teacher. And some of these I'll talk about later in a little more detail. There's the music and the rest of the curriculum as important motivators. The piano method series that you use, and I've already talked about beginner's methods in another episode. So having music and other teaching materials that excite the student and hold their interest is very important. And of course, in this regard, today's teachers have so many resources available, including excellent supplementary materials at each level. But the motivation of a student is also influenced by the age, the personality, the level of talent and interest of the student, the type of learner that student happens to be, the amount of parental support and encouragement, or perhaps in some cases, parental interference, in other words, the home environment. And our students are all different. They come from different backgrounds and family environments. They have different goals and levels of talent. And the fact is that some of them are more excited about piano lessons than others. And also something else to throw into the mix that I find interesting is to consider something that could possibly influence and impact motivation. There seems to be more evidence in recent years that children, and in fact human beings in general, have shown a shrinking attention span. Now, if this is the case, it could have a significant impact on productive practicing in the days between lessons and how that, in turn, can affect motivation. If you go to a website called familyzone.com, all one word, familyzone.com, or you can Google the title of the article, and the article is "Our Incredible Shrinking Attention Spans." Our Incredible Shrinking Attention Spans. It's based on a recent study in Denmark. Very interesting, and talks about decreasing attention spans and how that can affect many aspects of learning and shed light on motivation. So I guess all the more reason to ensure that when the student leaves the lesson, the student is excited, motivated, and has the right tools for a good practice week. Now, when we talk about motivation, there are two types we usually hear about, extrinsic and intrinsic. Extrinsic is being motivated by external factors, external motivators. With young children, for example, many teachers use stickers or certificates, a recital, a music festival, an examination, or getting praise from parents or recognition. Some parents use a weekly allowance as motivation for chores and for piano practice and so on. So there are all sorts of extrinsic motivators, and these can have a significant role in a student's progress and learning. Extrinsic motivators are common and can serve a useful purpose in teaching. Even as adults, just think of all the examples in our own lives, things we work for and we do for some type of external reward. Every week we perform tasks and jobs that are required, some of which we might not necessarily enjoy, but over the years, in order to keep our jobs and to do our jobs well and to continue to get paid, we do these tasks. How often teachers have told me that their least favorite part of running a studio is the business side of it. All of the bookkeeping and accounting, keeping track of payments, of expenses, all of those business aspects of managing their studios. Yet this is so important in terms of running your own business, as well as government requirements for filing taxes and your own personal financial management. It's absolutely necessary, but for many teachers, it's not their favorite part about running a studio. So many teachers have said to me, I just want to teach. So we have different forms of extrinsic motivators, external factors that motivate us all. On the other hand, intrinsic motivation is an internal form of motivation. It's when a student enjoys a sense of personal satisfaction from the activity. It's fun. The challenges of learning that particular skill or that new piece of music, the challenges are attainable and enjoyable and do not necessarily depend on any type of external reward. There's a sense of personal fulfillment and progress in the activity, and the learner is drawn to it. In the case of piano lessons, it is also the most productive kind of motivation, where the student is drawn to the piano to practice every day. Now, intrinsic motivation is not only critical to our students' progress while taking lessons, but also vitally important for the long term and for them to continue their music making and appreciation long after lessons have ended. So to distinguish between extrinsic and intrinsic motivation, one of the best illustrations I can use was in an earlier podcast, my podcast Thoughts on Competitions, and I included a short excerpt from pianist Lang Lang's book, Journey of 1,000 Miles, My Story. So if you remember, he had moved from China to Philadelphia, where he was studying with Gary Graffman at the Curtis Institute of Music. Now, Lang Lang had won a couple of prestigious competitions in China and Japan, but had never entered any of the big international piano competitions. He desperately wanted to, and he also wanted to win them all. Very highly competitive person. So he had high ambitions. And when he mentioned this to Gary Graffman, Gary Graffman's reply was, well, I think your days of playing in competitions are over. Lang Lang was quite shocked, and he couldn't really understand. He said, I don't understand. What's wrong with contests? And Gary Graffman went on to explain, and at the end of his explanation, he said, these competitions, and I quote, give you a particular kind of attitude. They direct your energy away from the process to the prize. And in my view, Lang Lang, it can't be about the prize. It must be about the process. So the prize is the extrinsic motivator. The process is the intrinsic, the internal satisfaction you get from the process of learning. So how do we engage our students in this process and help build intrinsic motivation, motivation from within, so that all those days in between lessons are productive? Well, starting in the early 20th century, there were many theories developed about human motivation. And psychologists were interested in answering some basic questions. What initiates a behavior? In other words, what perks your interest in something? What sustains your interest? And is there an optimum level of interest that you need in order to keep doing an activity? So there are all these different theories about motivation, but I'm not going to talk about those specifically today, because sometimes a great teacher can state something very concisely, very simply, that just seems to make a lot of common sense. And in that regard, I will quote again Frances Clark. In her video, Conversations with Frances Clark, Her Life and Teaching, she makes a very simple but profound statement. She says, and I quote, students are happy when they are learning, and parents know it, end of quote. So if our students are happy, they're more likely to remain engaged in the process. So until more recent years, and speaking of scientific research and study, there hasn't been a lot of research on the topic of motivation in private music lessons. So I've always been interested in research in other fields that I believe are similar and might help with our work as private music teachers. For example, there's outstanding work that's been done for decades in the field of sports psychology and motivation. And I believe there are strong similarities to music instruction. So many years ago, I started exploring this field to see what was out there. And after doing some digging around, I discovered one person in particular whose work really stood out for me and caught my attention. Dr. Glenn Roberts, who's a professor emeritus at the Norwegian School of Sports Science. He's also one of the editors and authors of an interesting book entitled Advances in Motivation in Sport and Exercise. It was published in 2012. When I read some of his research, I strongly felt that I could replace the word sports with music. So what was his research and what did he discover? Well, I want to take a few minutes today to talk about what I feel is significant work that applies very clearly to what we do in music. And to tie that in with what we do in music, while there hasn't been nearly as much research in our field, what is occurring is showing that there are very strong similarities between Dr. Roberts' work and work in more recent years being done specifically in music. There's a wonderful research team at the Research Lab on Piano Pedagogy at the University of Ottawa, and a study was conducted back in 2017, and an article was published, an online article which you can Google as well, and the title of the article is Predictors of Piano Student Dropouts. Predictors of Piano Student Dropouts. And so today I want to share some of the similarities between this research in sports psychology and motivation and recent work in music instruction and how these insights might guide us in our teaching. And I think, as I said, it confirms my thoughts about parallels between sports and music. But first, Dr. Roberts. What did he do? Well, he spent over 25 years studying not only elite athletes, Olympic caliber athletes, but also children who grew up in very competitive environments. And overall, what his work shows is the importance of intrinsic motivation, motivation from within, in order to have healthy progress and sustained interest. And his research states that motivation, whether you are extrinsically motivated or intrinsically motivated to achieve, depends on two primary types of goals. The first one he defined as ego-oriented goals. In other words, a motivation to win. I'm in it to win. You know, I want to get the highest mark in the festival or the exam. I want to win the festival class, whatever. I want to win the big competition. That's ego-oriented goals. In contrast to this are what Dr. Roberts called task-oriented goals. And you're motivated through mastering different tasks and different skills. And there's a personal satisfaction in learning and mastering a new skill, intrinsic motivation. Well, first of all, Dr. Roberts says that most researchers believe that people can be slightly or highly oriented towards either goal. And I think that makes sense. I mean, many of us we've taught a lot of students, and I've had students over the years who are just more competitive than other students. But what Dr. Roberts discovered was very important, was that a person's goal orientation, whether you're extrinsically motivated or intrinsically motivated, can be altered and formed by the person's environment, the home, or in our case, the piano studio. For example, if teachers and parents and coaches emphasize ego goals, that is extrinsic goals, the goal to win, it's important, you know, for recognition and for status. If they stress those instead of task goals or intrinsic goals, students, children, athletes will likely hold the ego type goals. And these goals are associated behaviors that they have learned from their teachers and from their coaches. And winning, being recognized as the best, are critically important to someone with ego-oriented goals. And achieving high status in the activity is important. But what Dr. Roberts discovered was that there's evidence that people who are ego-oriented, extrinsically motivated almost exclusively, can hinder success in school if a child begins to doubt his or her abilities, especially during the adolescent years. And this is when, in sports, they would often get frustrated and drop out. Interestingly, in the article, the more recent study, The Predictors of Piano Student Dropouts, the research showed, and I quote, that the approval-seeking piano students who required frequent external positive feedback were likely to quit. Interesting parallel. Going back to Dr. Roberts, his research in the field of sports demonstrated clearly that highly task-oriented people, intrinsically motivated people, enjoy learning more, they stick with it longer, and perform better than ego-oriented people. so that children in sports are better off if they're motivated by mastering skills and trying their best than if they're motivated by winning. Then Dr. Roberts looked very closely at the characteristics of children of various ages, and he discovered something that is critically important, I believe, for the piano teacher of an elementary age student. Dr. Roberts found that before the age of 12, children are generally task-focused. Young children do not recognize the difference between effort and ability. They believe that trying hard equals success. The most important thing is that you try. So children don't recognize the difference between effort and ability generally before the age of 12. So these early years represent an important time to nurture and build intrinsic motivation. This is our main window of opportunity to develop in our students a task-oriented approach that will plant the seeds whereby the students gain satisfaction from learning and from improving. This, to me, is one of the most important findings in all of his research. By age 12, Dr. Roberts discovered it's a completely different story. The students now realize that effort doesn't always equal achievement. So in sports, they could try really hard, but they still might not do very well. If they have been in an ego-focused environment where winning and being the best and recognition are very important, they begin to define success as beating others, and if they don't win, they drop out. In his research, he discovered that from ages 12 to 17, 90% of children dropped out of sports programs. His conclusion when he studied these students was that it was a result of coaches and parents and teachers promoting an ego focus as opposed to a task focus. Again, there are some really strong and interesting parallels with all of this and the research at the lab on piano pedagogy and the article Predictors of Piano Student Dropouts. And in the piano teaching research, and I will quote, the authors say, it has been shown that the shift from effort to ability attributions occurs during the sixth or seventh grades, and that these are the grades when teachers often have trouble keeping students involved in music. So those before the age of 12, once they reach the age of 12. And there are similar dropout statistics. Getting back to Dr. Roberts' research, if coaches switch from primarily ego-focused goals to primarily task-focused, the children enjoyed the sports more. They got more satisfaction from playing. They wanted to practice more. And they viewed the sport as a lifelong activity rather than a way to enhance their status. Interestingly, his research also found that generally task-oriented people like to practice, whereas ego-oriented people did not enjoy practicing as much. So those are just some of the highlights of that research. And there have been other scientific studies about motivation, not specifically to music, but studies that have shown that students who are more highly motivated intrinsically are more likely to be more focused in practice and less easily distracted, develop their own artistic voice, explore and become more creative, be more focused on learning and improving, be more confident and self-sufficient, and to feel greater satisfaction in their work. Now, getting back to the article, Predictors of Piano Student Dropouts, the research team gave two main reasons for student dropouts. And the two main reasons were expertise and environment. First of all, expertise. Students who dropped out tended to be the ones who, after several years of lessons, did not reach a level of expertise at the instrument compared to their friends. They were frustrated, they felt inferior, and they decided to give it up. Their friends were playing music that sounded much more impressive. The students who dropped out had reached fewer milestones. They had fewer opportunities to perform in recitals. And they may not have been eligible for exams or get into summer music camps or whatever. And with the dropout students, there were also issues with the home environment that contributed to the decision to quit. So parental involvement was shown to be a significant predictor of student dropouts. Another quote from this study, and I quote, "It is surprising that in our results we found no statistical significance between dropout and continuing groups, parents' attendance at lessons, contact with the piano teacher, help with the home practice, praise and rewards for home practice." the quality of parental involvement is what seems to be in question here. What the study showed was, and I quote, non-intrusive parental support where parents are not over-invested in their child's future may be preferable. So overbearing parents seem to contribute to the dropout rate. And to read another quote from that research on piano lessons, the research concluded that, quote, taking private lessons requires the support of the entire family such that children require a focused practice space with few distractions from siblings, a regular practice time without interfering scheduled activities, and encouragement from parents without negative comments about playing too loudly or complaints about repeating the same passage. Research in music education shows that the best musical learning is achieved when parents and teachers work in concert so that the unique opportunities and special resources of home and studio operate simultaneously and cooperatively to positively influence the growth of children. End of quote. So what does all of this mean to our piano teaching profession? Well, as I've said at the beginning, extrinsic motivators have their place in the studio. Rewards, stickers, certificates, music festivals. You know, if you offer regular group classes in addition to individual lessons, there are many opportunities for fun and exciting games with students in these classes that can use extrinsic motivators quite well. But my big concern is, how do we build in our students the capacity for intrinsic motivation? If they have that capacity when they're young, before the age of 12, so that they gain pleasure from the sheer enjoyment of learning and improving. And it happens in that piano lesson, that small but awesome window in a student's busy week. This is where the learning environment is established. The lesson where hopefully the student leaves feeling different in a positive way. I believe that so much of this is about the quality of your interaction with students and their parents. Quality interactions on so many levels. Interactions that strengthen the student's engagement and involvement in the process of learning to play the piano. And interactions with parents so that they help provide the type of home environment needed so that you become an incredible team. In terms of your interactions with students, I think it starts when you greet the student at the lesson. And I've said this in previous episodes. When the student arrives, the student immediately feels that the next 30 minutes are the most important 30 minutes in your week. You're glad to see the student. You're looking forward to the lesson. You know, it's great to see you. How was your week? The student is looking forward to seeing you. They have quality time with someone who is generally interested in them as persons. Your students know that they are important to you, and you become a very important person in their lives. And back to Frances Clarke again, where she said, you teach the person first, music second, and piano third. You know, I quote Frances Clarke a lot, and as an aside, I've often told my piano pedagogy students that if I could go back and start lessons all over again as a child and could choose any teacher, who would it be? And it, without question, it would be Frances Clarke. She was a brilliant pedagogue, a remarkable person, teacher, mentor, who did so much to advance our profession. And she reminded us over and over again that our interest in the student as a person first is very, very important. I'm also a firm believer in making the teaching as interactive as possible. Teaching is much more than telling or showing or giving instructions. It's interacting, discussing, more of a teamwork approach. You know, for example, if you're working with a student to create a crescendo to the peak of a phrase, you can do what some of my teachers did in the past. While I'd be playing, they'd be standing beside me saying more, more, louder, louder, and coaching me as I'm playing. Or you could maybe invite the student into the process a little more. They try it some more, ask them how they felt. Ask the student to do what he or she feels is an exaggerated crescendo. And I think in interacting teaching, one of the most important questions you can ask your students when they do something is, what did you notice? Effective practicing and teaching is about what you notice. What would it sound like if the left hand also did more crescendo to support the right hand? They try it. What did you think? What did you notice about that one? Keeping the student's mind and ear constantly involved in the process. If they take the what did you notice approach and apply it to their own practicing, it can become a much more engaging and productive process for the student during the week. You know, I believe too that if students are engaged in their daily practice, there is less need for parents. You know, some parents who will, if a child is supposed to do 20 minutes a day, they turn on a timer and set the timer for 20 minutes and the student can stop when the timer, you know, beeps at the end. And I think if students are really involved in their practicing and engaged in it, they will lose track of time, and those sorts of timers are not necessary. And also interactive teaching. By interacting with our students, they're all different. We get to know them better. We get to know what they notice, how they listen, what they actually hear, how they perceive what they're working on, and we're better equipped then to work with them further. And closely related to this what did you notice idea, and I've said this already, we learn to play the piano, and any other skill we learn through repetition. It's how we learn, but it's also one of the biggest traps we can fall into as pianists. What I call mindless repetition. You know, there's a passage, the teacher tells you to work on it and to play it 10 times every day, and so you switch on to autopilot and you start practicing without listening to what you're doing. It becomes a strictly mechanical process. If I could get back every hour I spent until my high school years, that's when I really started to practice well and practice seriously. All those previous years, if I could get back every hour that I wasted at the piano doing mindless practicing, that would be many hours. So teach our students the importance of repetition with a purpose. I think it should be one of the mottos we have in our studio. Repetition with a purpose. So much time can be saved, and practicing can be so much more efficient and a lot more accomplished. So you play something, but before you play it again, think about what did I notice, and what am I trying to achieve? So this time I want the staccato to be more detached, or whatever it's about. Trying to make the practicing more engaging by encouraging repetition with a purpose. Then there's the whole area of selecting and presenting music. This is critical so that students feel that they're making progress, and especially the ones who are inclined to drop out, where they feel inferior once they've had several years of lessons. Now, of course, if you follow a method series, there's a prescribed sequence of pieces and other materials, but many of today's method series are expertly and creatively written so as to engage young students with these pieces. And they have, you know, wonderful pieces, illustrations that are appealing, lots of supplementary materials that are well coordinated with the main method book. And then apart from that, there's an abundance of other supplementary repertoire for all levels outside of the series that you're using. But once you leave the method series, I think it's really important to spend time carefully selecting music for each student. I think this is critical. Finding pieces that the student will be excited about, just the right amount of challenge, requiring work, but within reach of the student's abilities, that optimum level of challenge. Pieces and a teaching style that engage the student's imagination, curiosity, and desire to work at the music on their own. If you explore the repertoire, for example, for students who have not reached the same level of expertise as their friends, there are pieces out there that sound more difficult than they actually are. Finding repertoire that plays to the student's strengths. Over the years, I've spent countless hours researching through music, trying to find the best fit, the best piece for each student, and it was always time well spent. Another area for motivation is duet playing. If you can pair up two good duet partners who are about the same level, there's so much wonderful music of all different styles and all levels to explore together. And it's also one of the best ways to develop good rhythmic playing in a student. We have a joke in our family. We have three adult children, and one of our sons, all three children are married to wonderful spouses, and one of our sons, he met his wife at the age of 5, when she enrolled in my wife's studio, and they played a piano duet together in the music festival. And the title of the duet was the Bow Wow Chorus. So we always joke and say it all started with the Bow Wow Chorus when they were 5 years old. So you never know where duet playing will lead, but it's a wonderful way to motivate and to group kids together who are like-minded and have the same interests. Quick studies can be a great motivator, developing the student's individual voice. You give them a piece that's very manageable, they have to work at it on their own, and you're not going to spend a lot of time correcting it or teaching it. You're going to kind of stay out of the process. and let them explore it. Let them own it. Let them be creative. Let them just run with it. And it's all part of the development and learning process. Building their own voice. And it's building a repertoire of pieces that they've learned that are readily available to play. I think it's also very important to show our students how to practice. Practicing is applying the tools we already know to the new music we are learning. If, in fact, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, if our attention spans are shrinking, then all the more reason to ensure that our students leave with the most effective, efficient practice techniques for the music they're working on. And again, with interactive teaching, you recognize the student, what type of learner the student is, how they're listening, what they hear, and choosing that right technique to practice those tricky bits in the music, and choosing the bite-sized pieces that the student can manage and they can witness the progress and feel the progress throughout the week. I think it's very important as teachers to teach our students to practice smart and to have those productive days. Recording the repertoire of parts of pieces can be extremely useful. Recording and saving the file. So students will hear the progress as they trace their development of learning the piece. Students spend their daily practice time working on some of the specific details of their music, and sometimes they get frustrated because they can't see or hear the progress they're making. And sometimes the piece and the student will actually hit a wall and get extremely frustrated. But if you have a recording, you actually have physical evidence of the improvements that have been made. They can hear firsthand and compare how it sounds today compared to 2 or 3 weeks ago. And recordings can also have the advantage of helping students listen better. I mean, how often I've had a student say to me that they feel that their performance has a lot of dynamic contrast, and we record it and listen to it, and the student is quite shocked to hear how little contrast there really is. It's also important to make the most of positives in the lesson, as many little successes and discoveries as possible. I believe that success at a piano lesson also involves being strategic with each student. They're all different. They're different types of learners. Some of them get frustrated more easily. Some of them are developing at a faster pace. Some of them can handle more in the lesson than others, and so on. But it's good to start with something that will show progress, or ask the student, what do you feel went really well this week? Start with something they're excited about. Being strategic also requires that you have a good memory as a teacher. Remember how the last lesson went. Either through your memory of the lesson, and depending on how many students you have, or some refresher notes you've written in the student's lesson book from last week. But it's important to take notice and to praise improvements. And if you remember the previous lesson and the improvements that are being made, it strengthens your relationship with the student. Remember at the beginning I said the importance of the student knowing that they are important to you. And it helps build that relationship. I think it's very important strategically to pace the lesson. If you've only got 30 minutes and you have a lot of material to cover, you might want to, as I said, start by reviewing something they know well, or they start with a favorite piece. When you're doing something new, try not to get too bogged down in the lesson. And perhaps end with reviewing something that they've learned or that they really understand, or again, part of their favorite piece before they leave, but leaving with a sense that progress is being made. And I think it's so important when the student leaves that you find in some final words before they leave the studio, something that went well in the lesson. You know, good lesson, great progress on those runs in the Mozart, beautiful legato today, great listening. So for me, motivation, even with very young students, is about engaging them in the process of learning to play the piano. Yes, there can be extrinsic rewards. Absolutely, they have their place in the studio. But for our students' long-term growth and sustained interest in piano lessons, I think it will depend largely on the enjoyment, the fulfillment, and the satisfaction they get and that they remember getting. Motivating students can be challenging. But I hope that some of the suggestions here today will be helpful in building stronger motivation from within, stronger intrinsic motivation with your students. I wish you the very best in your teaching careers, and I thank you for listening. I invite you to visit my website at edmunddaw.com, and there's also a link with each podcast episode. that you can follow to support the podcast or write a review. Thanks again, and bye for now.